The Rufus Project would like to advise the following podcast contains spoilers for Gem and the Holograms from 2015. If you do not wish to have this movie spoiled, please watch this movie before listening to the following podcast. Is it truly, truly, truly outrageous or just an outrage? We watched Gem and the Holograms to see if it was redeemable. Were we successful? Find out after this theme.
Boy? Oh boy.
Is it good to be bad? So bad it's good. What's this? Should've got bad, I love dodgy creatures, but we want to know what the redeeming features.
Boy.
Hello and welcome to the Rufus Project Redeeming Features cast. This time looking at Gem and the Holograms from 2015. I'm your host, Trevor Holland, and I am joined by my good friend and co-host,
Christian Fletcher. Thanks, Trevor, for having me back for the redeeming features. It's great to be back after... I can't even remember what the last film was. I've washed it from my brain, so I'm ready. Looking forward to the next one.
Excellent. Yeah, I've got to admit, I am over my therapy from Mummy Dearest, so we can move on to this one.
How quickly I forgot. He was me thinking it might have been Blood Rain, and I thought, oh, washed it off me. I thought, oh, that was a really clever use of a pun, but but obviously not. So thank you for reminding me, Mummy Dearest. Anyway, we digress. Thanks for having me back.
Oh, my pleasure, as always. And certainly, I'm glad you came back after I subjected you to Gem and the Holograms. I actually did a bit more prep in preparation for this. Before I watched this movie, I dug up a list of the most ridiculous episodes of the original cartoon series and watched a couple of those.
And how did you find in comparison, or is that giving away too much already?
Let's just say the cartoon series and this movie are very, very different beasts.
Well, I found it interesting. I know not the Wikipedia is the be-all and end-all, but I love how they've actually listed it as an American musical fantasy, very loosely, and I've got that in inverted commas, very loosely based on the original TV series. So I know Wikipedia is probably doing us a favour by saying that, but I'm sure there would have been a lot of disappointed people out there that were expecting a rehash of the original series. Now, I actually, about last year when I think they started releasing the teaser trailers for Gem and the Holograms, my friends go, oh my God, Christian, you know, this has been made into a movie. And I honestly had never heard of the series before. I don't know if I was a little young to sort of remember it, or it might be that I wasn't a big cartoon buff. So I'm sort of coming in from the angle of having done a little bit of research, seen, you know, a couple of bits of the episodes and read up about it. But yeah, so I'm coming into it more as a general moviegoer. So I'm hoping I can sort of throw a bit of light in that respect. And I'm probably just as confused as you are.
Fair enough. Well, I mean, it had been a long time since I'd seriously watched any of the original cartoon. And I don't know if the cartoon has aged all that well, even though it was a... Yeah, the episodes I chose, they were quite strange. But then, I guess if you look up at the list for the most ridiculous or the most insane episodes of a cartoon series, I guess I've only got myself to blame for that.
Oh, definitely. And I think, too, you know, you've got to remember, and I always say, you've got to think the historical context. In the 80s, that would have been wild, you know. And, you know, I've read that it was also to sort of, it came as a result of MTV being quite popular at the time, you know, the use of music videos within the cartoon as well. So it was very much of its time. So, and I felt that obviously in the translation over 30 years later, we've got quite a different story that's been told. But there was rumours it was actually going to be, instead of a film, it was going to be possibly a new version of the animated series. And Trevor, maybe they should have picked that angle. But anyway, that's a little bit of trivia there that I dug up.
Yeah, I had heard that they were originally planning an animated feature before backing off from that. But certainly... a bit more as we go on about that. So we may as well move into the turkey trivia. Let's just keep this ball rolling. I've dug up some stats and some trivia. So on IMDb, Gem and the Hologram rates a grand total of 3.9 out of 10. The budget for Gem and the Holograms was $5 million, and there's no worldwide gross at this stage, I guess, because it's still a fairly new movie, but as of November 2015, it had grossed about $2.1 million at the US box office, and as of February 2016, had made about £8,800 in the UK. So, not a very good start.
And I think I read that it didn't even get a screening in Australia. It just went straight to DVD, direct-to-DVD in March. So, yeah, we had to be subjected to it in some way, but not good for a major motion picture. And I believe the fourth worst opening in history or something of a film to have sort of, you know, 2,000 or more screens, you know, which, you know, in other words, a major motion picture. So, yeah, it was breaking records, but I don't know if it's in a good way.
Definitely not. Yeah, I mean, it was actually meant to come out in Australia in February, the same time as the UK. And I think even when I was talking about this last time, I was under the impression that it may have still been on cinema screens. But then, no, it never made it to our cinema screens. Because, yeah, as you were saying, if we go into a bit of trivia, following a very disappointing opening weekend, the worst opening from a major studio in 2015, and the worst opening of all time for a film showing on more than 2,400 screens, Universal pulled the film from US theatre after just 2 weeks. Ooh.
And it's interesting to see how a film can be killed so early because, you know, all those trailers having been released so many months earlier, and I was seeing all the negative reaction from diehards of the original series. So you can see how all that word of mouth would have really just killed it, you know, and it was probably just curiosity factor that got that $2 million in the first place. So wow, that's interesting. So yeah, it's making history, but for the wrong reasons.
Yeah, and when you're talking about I suppose the ultimate diehard fan, Christy Marks, who actually wrote the original Gem cartoon series, actually said she had no idea a film was going to be made and was really upset that Hasbro did not inform her about it.
So the interesting thing, didn't I read that she actually makes a cameo in the movie anyway? So they must have, you know, she must have obviously found out about it in pre-production. But yeah, I thought that was interesting. She's still thinking, I've got to do something to save this. But it obviously didn't help. But yeah, how annoyed would you be? So that's what happens when other companies own these things.
I'm not sure if it was her, but apparently a number of the original voice actors did appear in this movie in just very, very small roles. Aubrey Peoples, who plays the lead character, was actually unfamiliar with the cartoon Gem, but did become a fan of it during the production.
Yay! Whether it really helped, considering she seemed to, you know, it seemed to be two totally different gems that we're looking at. But yeah, I don't know if that was possibly a wise thing for her to have seen it, but hey, there's nothing that could be done from a sinking ship already, because it was already from the outset going to be a reimagining anyway, this very loose adaptation. So, and it couldn't distance itself even further from the source material, though, could it?
Yeah. Also, considering the last thing I got here was that it was actually released on the 30th anniversary of the cartoon series starting. So for those who wanted something true to the source material, I can just imagine that was just like, just more of a red rag to a raging bull.
Oh, gosh, they would have hated it, you know. And I think, you know, without giving too much away, they sold this to the wrong audience. They pissed off their first audience and then essentially had to try and sell it to a different audience. And, yeah, it's interesting to see how, two things can be so different. So, yeah, there would have been a lot of diehards that were quite upset with this screen adaptation.
Absolutely. Now, if you're out there and you don't know what Gem and the Holograms is about, I've got a little synopsis here, culled from IMDb, one of our favourite sources, because it's just all there. So, as a small-town girl catapults from underground video sensation to global superstar, she and her three sisters begin a journey of discovering that some talents are too special to keep hidden.
Sounds intriguing. That would make a great movie.
Yeah, it doesn't sound too bad from that synopsis. But as we were saying, There are those who do not like it, and that's where we like to start when we start talking about actual opinions. I've culled a review from Amazon, simply titled, "Hated It." Are you a fan of the original Gem and the Holograms cartoon? If you answered yes, then don't watch this. Sure, they drop a few lines from the theme song like Truly Truly Outrageous and Our Songs Are Better and We're Gonna Get Her and of course Showtime Synergy and Show's Over Synergy. And speaking of Synergy, there is like only one instance of an actual hologram in this movie. No, I don't count the times the robot showed them a map. So if you're waiting to see Gem change her clothes with holograms, don't hold your breath. If you really want to watch Gem on the Holograms, I recommend watching the original cartoon from the 80s. Or you could just go to YouTube and watch some people on there singing and playing instruments, because we see that like every 20 minutes or so. This movie was just plain boring and it bombed horribly at the box office. If anything, this should have been a direct-to-DVD release or made-for-TV movie. 1 star.
Ooh. Like always, Trevor, I always seem to relate to a lot of the things that the one-star reviews give. But yeah, I like that thought. Television movie, that's an interesting concept. I wonder if they could have made that work. But yeah, a lot of interesting things brought up there that I think we will definitely touch on.
Quite possibly. And he has mentioned YouTube there, and I couldn't help noticing that over the opening monologue from our friend Jem, it was all set over like a YouTube compilation to set the scene.
It was really like this film, you know how they say a film for the next generation. I really think this was supposed to be a film for the net generation, you know, that much younger than us, the next generation below. And I think that was just what they wanted to set up and hit home as much as possible. And that whole concept of, being one of the characters uses the line, "You're internet famous," you know, because that's sort of, I suppose, the term nowadays. You can be famous and internet famous. So it just seemed to want to hit home that whole YouTube thing early on and bring back clips like that throughout the whole movie.
Yeah, and it really was big on a lot of social media as well. I mean, I couldn't help but laugh in probably vague disbelief rather than finding it humorous at the start where they're talking about social media and saying how everyone has everyone is someone different on the internet and they hide behind it, which is why Facebook has a wall. What? Are you... What? Yeah.
I know. Yeah, exactly. It's sort of, it's trying to fit that in. Oh, yeah. It's trying to fit the whole hiding behind the persona, but look, already even talking about it, Trevor, I'm confused, because considering in the original series she used the hologram to cover her, you know, to change her identity, whereas this movie seems to be more about trying to reveal that, because actually what underneath is what is important. So it's already getting quite skewed and mixed up, and I think, you know, using the internet as, you know, possible success story, you know, it's just, you know, it's using all that, yeah, the jargons and all that, like, you know, even the little Google Maps icon and things like that. It's really, you know, trying to hit home the whole internet generation every step of the way.
Oh, they love their Google Map transitions when they change locations, didn't they?
Oh, and even the 3D kind of the terrain. Oh God, how clever. But I don't know if I'm you know, moving on by saying this, but probably the biggest thing that set out to, like, that hit me straight away is what made them decide to set this, aside from having set it in the 80s. Like, it just seems like by making it new, and obviously it's trying to appeal to a sort of a more of a modern audience, but yeah, automatically you're seeing it taken, you know, 30 years into the future, and it's I don't know if it really works for it, when really I don't know, it's proving that she doesn't need these holograms. You can become internet famous overnight and get hits that are that easy to get. I didn't realize getting hits on a video was that easy, but anyway.
It is when it's posted by the girl that invented posting her entire life online. I believe that's how she describes her sister, Kimber, at one point, as the one who essentially broke ground by basically posting everything she did online. She was the first, according to gem in this opening monologue.
And she was internet famous, so, but like, oh, I don't know. I just think this technology didn't really lend itself to, like, look, the original series was fantasy, and you know, they could get away with using Synergy as with the holograms and everything. But I didn't really think changing eras was really needed. It didn't, bringing it into that kind of internet world or internet generation just felt to me like it didn't really need to do that. But it brought up a couple of interesting things and appealed to the younger audience, which I don't know if that was the right audience for this film. But
yeah, I think also with that initial tone and the way they started, I was thinking initially, I was wondering if it was almost meant to be a documentary-style movie, because of the way they introduce it and the way they introduce the characters and they're kind of referring to what has happened. I think, is this going to be the tone of the movie all the way through, that she's essentially making her own documentary about her rise to stardom? I mean, that did sort of like take a backseat after a while and then change towards the end. But yeah, it certainly was a very, I guess, formal and serious start to this movie. And then as she's introducing her sisters, and they're all basically stereotypes. Oh, look, there's a nonconformist hacker girl. And there's the bubbly, I'm going to post everything I do on the internet. And there's the, I know fashion girl. And then there's the incredibly talented, but oh so shy, Jerrica, who ends up becoming Jem. So it's like, yeah. And then when the mum's introduced, the first thing I thought was, is that Molly Ringwald? And it was.
That's
Molly
hilarious.
Ringwald.
That's so funny you say that. I've actually got that line written in my notes. Is that Molly Ringwald? And I had to look it up. Obviously, I realised, you know, a few scenes into the movie that, yeah, it was her. But I thought that was another thing that was clever, having an 80s icon in this 80s iconic series that was adapted. But if it was set in the 80s, it would have been even more awesome. So it was good they had her on board, and it was good to have that familiar face, even though it wasn't too familiar to start with. So, I had the exact same thought, Trevor.
But, I mean, when they decided to make a music video with Kimber, they dug out the 80s fashion from the garage, and we got our first, I suppose, actual gem line where Jerrica gets all dressed up. Oh, Jerrica, you look truly outrageous!
Oh, subtle flip there.
Very subtle.
But yeah, but then at the same time, like, even though it seems so much like the whole way through to try and distance itself from the cartoon, you know, things like that would come through, but it almost felt like any time it did make reference to the original cartoon or you know, had scenes like this, it was almost taking a dig at it. It was like, I've even got, there was one part, I think, when she was wearing, I think it was when she was wearing the earrings in front of Juliette Lewis, and she says, you don't want to look like you're from 1985 or something like that. And it just, I've noticed a few different times throughout the movie where they just took digs at the, you know, the era in which I suppose the people watching it should have been appealing to. So I thought that was quite strange. It kind of, you know, so yeah, again, this sort of thing, it just came across that real, oh, let's dress up and kind of make fun of it. I don't know.
Yeah,
you said, you know, that use of the line, yeah, it was interesting. Sorry.
Yeah. Don't gloss over the fact, and this was like when that record manager turned up, I just want, Juliette Lewis is in this? What? That struck me dumb. It was just like, that's Juliette Lewis. Is that Juliette Lewis? That's Juliette Lewis. What's Juliette Lewis doing in this?
I was kind of stunned. I was like, oh, thank God. She's always great and stuff. So I'm like, oh, thank God, another familiar face. But yeah, at first I'm like, yeah, is that her? Is she, what is she in this? I bet she's wishing she hadn't done this movie. But from what my research has found, they replaced, is it Eric Raymond was the name of the baddie in the original, and they've feminized her for the film adaptation, which I thought was interesting and kind of a cool touch. So and she does play the part well. So, but yeah, I wonder why they've decided to do that. They might have thought it would be more of a female empowerment movie that way.
Quite possibly. Mind you, though, as you go through the movie and she becomes more and more like, you know, the stereotyped evil queen type character. I mean, if it wasn't the 21st century, she probably would have given them more. If she was any more evil, she'd give them more poisoned apples. So, I don't know, she'd give them iPhones infected with viruses or something instead, as a modern equivalent.
It reminds me of a couple of other movies we've watched where it's almost like, you know, she's having an absolute bore with this. She's like, I'm playing a villain and I'm going to just lap this up as much as possible. And I think she wasn't overacting, but yeah, she was just pretty much spitting out every line as, you know, as though she was in on the joke. So, but unfortunately, the rest of the cast were taking themselves far too seriously. So, but yeah, no, it was good having her as an addition to the cast.
Absolutely. And just before she turned up, probably one of the things that I noticed, which turned into a bit of a theme throughout the movie, when there was like that confrontation or when there was like a developmental scene, so Jerrica is messaging through to Erica, and it's got the whole, let's put the words up on the screen beside the person that's typing, which I think we last saw in that Miley Cyrus movie that I can't remember the name of, so we won't go back to that because it was horrible.
Yep.
But it was over like this YouTube video of a drum battle, and then later on, you know, it seemed like these key scenes, instead of having like just dramatic music or something in the background, they actually would use some sort of YouTube video to set the scene and kind of almost give the scene that little extra. And I did find that kind of interesting that they, you know, as one of the ongoing social media references, I think it was slightly more imaginative than, oh, look, here's Google Earth showing you they're going from one place to another, which they do way too much.
Yeah, definitely. I agree with what you mean about, you know, it making the beat and stuff like that. It was an interesting way of doing it. And yeah, like I was saying earlier, it fits in with that whole net generation, or that, you know, the current youngsters and you know, the sort of I don't know, that sort of looking from screen to screen, that kind of I don't know, always hard to hold concentration looking at so many different things. So yeah, it worked quite well, and I think the editing was really good in that. But yeah, they definitely had a clever use of viral videos. But one important thing that kind of spelt out to me, you know, that you've got that footage. I think the gopher's on, is it on jet skis or water skis? Is that what it's got?
Water skiing squirrel.
Squirrel, that's it. I don't know why I've got gopher here. I must be thinking of Caddyshack. But I actually thought when the first time they showed that, I think it was actually after she'd got all those hits from, you know, becoming internet famous overnight. And then they followed that by showing the clip of the squirrel. And I thought that was a really interesting juxtaposition, because it was almost like, it complemented each other, because it really sort of showed that, yeah, anyone can get famous. You just got that many hits, but so did that squirrel. So it kind of dampened the message a little bit, in terms of like, you're supposed to be early on in the movie showing that, you know, look what can happen to you. This is great. You know, this is great. But then it was also like showing, yeah, but everyone else is out there doing it too. So I don't know. That was sort of something that kind of went against the message a bit to me. But hey, I know that's not what the whole thing was about. But yeah, I thought that was an interesting note.
I think they showed the video because she said something along the lines of, oh, you're more popular than the water skiing squirrel. Oh, I love that squirrel. Oh, he's so cute. And then they get to the end of the scene and they fade out and they show a bit of the water skiing squirrel.
Oh, no. Now I feel like even more of an idiot. But hey, it's reminding us anyway. It would have made the two people in the cinema laugh, I'm sure.
Yeah, the two of them. And then as they all left, Jem and her sisters, being the band, left to Google Earth their way to Hollywood, I couldn't help noticing there appeared to be a toilet roll by the front door of the house. On the whole toilet roll holder and everything, there was like this round paper with a bit hanging down. I fixated on it as they were walking away. What, is that toilet paper? And then we Google Earth to Hollywood and got to see the Hollywood sign. because you can't go to Hollywood without the Hollywood sign.
Yeah, just so we know exactly where we are. But they seem to like all their their Google Earthing and their coordinates. I had to laugh later on when the character was using, putting all the synergy, putting all the coordinates into her phone. I've never known someone to type coordinates in so quickly. It was almost like magic.
Oh, but that was the nonconformist hacker girl who knows all about it.
Of course. She'd probably do it with, like, the stroke of a couple of keys.
Absolutely. I mean, that was a very interesting thing. It was almost like, I don't know, like... Okay, well, let's do a comparison here. There is, in the original cartoon, they have a supercomputer called Synergy that creates holograms to hide the true identities of Jem and the Holograms so they can appear as Jem and the Holograms and do all sorts of other things, like pretend to be the conscious of the bad people and try to distract them. It's really strange. In this movie, we have a little tiny cute robot called Synergy, or 51NG, whatever it was. Synergy for short. And when they get to Hollywood, it doesn't activate until that point. And they work out it's because they're near something. So if that was one of the conditions, what if Jem had never gone to Hollywood? I mean, it's a gift from her dead father that's never worked. What if things went pear-shaped and she ended up moving to the other side of the country or to another country altogether? She never would have had that robot activated. So I'm thinking that the dad made some pretty major assumptions in thinking that she would get close enough to a certain point so that Synergy could then start leaving clues to send them on like a scavenger hunt for essentially more parts of Synergy.
Oh, it just sounds like that, just not knowing enough about the original cartoon, it sounds like they changed that entire thing quite a lot because the father, in the movie, the father created Synergy, and I assume he does in the cartoon, but doesn't the father apparently, it says in the opening credits, he owned Starlight Music, which, again, is something that doesn't quite match up, which I'm a bit confused about.
No, I think he was just an inventor, because there's a whole subplot of Juliet Lewis, Erica, and her son, Rio. Rio also being the name of Jim's boyfriend in the original cartoon. And it was Rio's father who was married to Juliet Lewis, who had the record company and left it to Juliet Lewis. Or did he?
I do get the feeling they were trying to possibly set up the series for a series of movies, possibly. I just felt that they were kind of only half telling the story. I'll touch on it a bit later with something that happens in the end. But I did feel that they were kind of expecting this to be a trilogy or a franchise. But obviously that went pear-shaped when the movie came out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a movie with lots of, let's just say, shall we say, convenient coincidences.
It was just so that by the numbers, so many things, continue.
Yeah, that was fine. I was just thinking, like, so they follow this map coordinates to the first clue, that gives a map coordinates to a second clue, which happens to be a nightclub, and they manage to arrange to have what their first show at this particular nightclub, even though apparently it is super duper exclusive and super hard to get a show there. And very conveniently, there's a power outage, which lets them get the crowd involved so they can get across to the other side to the guitar where the next piece of Synergy is hidden. And then when they found that piece, I knew exactly what the next piece was going to be because it was just so predictable. I basically, when they opened up this guitar, which happened to be her father's, while it's on a wall of a particular nightclub, we don't know. And then, the second they opened it, even before they got the piece out of the guitar, I claimed quite clearly, I know what the last piece is. And, well, again, let's get to that a bit later on, because that's getting close to the end of the movie.
Oh, yeah. yes, I know. And it just felt so, like I said earlier, like so many, by the numbers, they were literally just, they were trying to do the whole teen drama / backstage movie, you know, like following a formula that's been done to death, interspersed with lots of getting dressed and travelling montages, I felt. You know, there was always the whole slow montage of them playing in the, you know, with the water hose and getting dressed and all. I suppose very typical for the Rise to Fame movie, because you always have to have that Rise to Fame. And there always seems to be a literal, I've got to hear, it literally was an overnight success. And in this movie, it seemed to happen oh so quickly. And you were thinking, God, what's going to happen for the rest of the movie? Is it going to be her tragic downfall? But anyway... it literally did. They didn't really build that up too much, just probably with a quite long montage of some song I didn't know.
Absolutely. Yeah, the song seems to be going for quite some time. And, I mean, if we refer back to that initial conversation, the typey fluty text one over the drum battle, there was that point where Erica was trying to sign up just Jem by herself, and she said, oh no, my sisters have to come with me because they're my band. But then, of course, when Jem needs money or her mum's going to get kicked out of the house, that's where evil Erica steps in and just goes, I'll give you the advance and all the money, but you have to sign the solo contract. At which point we get a very, I don't know if it was meant to be a concert or a music video, it was almost Lady Gaga-esque when she had to do her solo show. With these bizarre backup dancers.
And it was literally like they were trying to, I thought they could make this the music video or the musical number of the movie, and instead they make it the least Jem, based off the original series, the least Jem thing they could. Yeah, I just felt like Lady Gaga had walked out on stage.
and when you think about it, because it does come in a bit later on, it's a whole, like the son, Rio, wants the record label to take more risks, but Erica keeps playing it safe, and she thinks sending Jem solo is going to be the safe thing to do. I will get to a point on that a bit later on, which proves that's quite ironic for this movie.
I'm interested to hear what it is.
But essentially, okay, we'll talk about the earrings, shall we?
Oh, yes, the earrings that I've got here. Those earrings are so 30 years ago. Again, a dig at the era in which it came out, but I continue.
But, of course, it ends up, so the earrings are so old-fashioned that Juliette Lewis takes them and locks them in her safe for no legitimate reason. And then, of course, they realise, oh, we need the earrings to complete Synergy. And they hatch this elaborate plan to have Rio steal his mother's car so they can sneak into the studios and work out her safe combo to steal the earrings back. Seriously, they look like a couple of tacky purple plastic earrings. I'm pretty sure she could have just gone, hey, Erica, can I please have my earrings back? They've got sentimental value. I don't think even Erica would have refused to give them back to her. I just don't understand why it had to be such a convoluted thing, aside from the fact that they needed some excuse for Rio to get into the safe to see his father's will and find out about the conditions of the will when it comes to the record company.
That section just seemed... it just seemed to go on and on too, and it was so predictable. You knew it was going to get to a stage where, oh no, Erica comes back and finds there's people in the building. We've got to try and get out, and we've got to create a diversion, all that sort of stuff. It went on and was so predictable. And then, of course, you've got the typical, oh, can I just get the autograph? Oh, it's not for me. I mean, it's not for me. It's for my kid. And then she said, oh, what's your daughter's name? Oh, Stephen. Like, you know, these cliches have been done to death in so many movies. I could see it coming a mile away. And it felt like that whole scene just went on for ages. Like, you know, considering, you know, it felt like it was trying to be the big climax of the movie when really there was nothing that nothing to get that excited about.
Yeah, and those security guards that are cliched bumbling security guards. Oh, look, every security camera, bit of security camera footage is being replaced by the water skiing squirrel. Let's laugh at the water skiing squirrel instead of worrying about the fact that all our camera feeds are going down.
Oh, they have to be the bumbling ones, don't they, of course, yeah. that are running security on this very important music building that has earrings in a safe that are cheap and tacky from 1985. So, yeah, very interesting.
And that's where we found out that once she completed Synergy, she got a hologram recording of her dad, saying that the whole point of putting Synergy together was to help her grow.
That's where it felt like it was this, you know, dreams can come true, this really motivational, you know, trying to be this motivational film for teenagers, you know, rather than, you know, try to appeal to its original audience that, it, you know, that it should have been. And I think the whole, you know, bringing, you know, how you said, you know, there's not, I think it was in the review that I think you only see like one hologram or something in the whole, you know, aside from maps. You know, like Synergy was kind of an afterthought. Oh, we better put Synergy in because, you know, it was part of the series. But they really just wanted it to be this teen drama, you know, and all these other sort of plot things were added in, you know. Oh, we better put them in. Fans will like it.
Yeah. But the other thing that really got me about the whole dad's message, so we've probably covered it before. When I say they're all sisters, they're kind of like foster sisters, except I believe there's plenty of stuff showing Jerrica and Kimber together as actual sisters. And so when the dad is just going on and on and on about Jerrica and how proud he is, I'm thinking, thank God Kimber isn't hanging around, because she would just feel terrible that her dad is just all about Jem and doesn't even give her a mention at all that entire time.
The only thing I was thinking is, unless she hadn't been born yet, but no, they seem closer in age, that she would have been around, surely. So, yeah, that is quite strange. I didn't really pick up on that, but yeah. Ripped off would she be?
Yeah, because they go to that old house they used to live in, and there's like a flashback of the dad and Jerrica and Kimber sitting on the steps, and they graffiti in the concrete, which is still there.
Oh, that's right.
So many years later. So it's like... Screw you, Dad, who has a huge favourite.
Oh, God, yes, I didn't put two and two together with that.
Anyway.
The couple of the, I think it was episode one or two of the first series of the, first season of the animated series, that I believe that it was the Starlight, they have the Starlight Foster Home for Girls or something, and that's where Jem lived, so I don't know if that was the whole situation with them, the other two being sisters. So I don't know if that was any supposed to be anything to do with that, a tie into the original, but maybe not.
Well, yeah, basically Molly Ringwald was the foster mother. I believe she was Jerrica and Kimber's aunt, I think.
Yeah, Aunt Bailey, I think.
Something like that.
Well, that might have been. But as I should stop comparing it to the series, though, because it was very loosely adapted, but you can't help but do it.
But when they decide to all perform together, regardless of the contract that Jem had to sign, and she's there with Synergy before the show, and she just goes, "It's showtime, Synergy!" Yeah, that's nice and forced.
Yeah, it's like a bit a little too late. And then the whole time I'm thinking to myself, surely they're not going to go and perform. How come we haven't seen Erica or Juliette Lewis run in and try and stop everything? Oh, next thing she walked in. But that sort of kind of was all resolved quite quickly.
Yep, and we find out that, oh, look, the will said that Rio could take over as soon as he felt he was ready. And he felt ready. And he says, we've got to let this label take more risks. So, I'm the boss now. You're fired, Mum.
And the true Hollywood cliche, the bouncers then go, sorry, he's working for me now, and escort her out.
Absolutely. And we find out that the heavy who's been hanging around Erica is a big fan of Jem and the Holograms music.
It works out well, huh? Another cliche from film. So, but I even found, like I was saying, that, you know, the whole that whole climax with her coming in and all that was quite quick. But then when the girls have the fight too and they go solo, it's almost like they forgive her pretty quickly, don't they? It's like that's sort of like only a drop in the ocean, you know. It's like onto the next thing. So
because they realise they love each other and they need to support each other, whatever. Their family.
A house is just a building or whatever, you know, home is where all your friends are or something like that. I won't quote it.
it's quite sappy, I guess. So she plans to reveal her identity to the world, and then there's a whole montage of all these. She goes and checks hashtag Jem on Twitter before the concert, and there's all these things saying, "Oh, Jem, you helped me so much," and it's all very inspirational. And that's when she changes her mind and decides to inspire the world by saying, "We are all Jem. I feel so much inspire. We are all Jem."
Oh, I'm great. It's good to know, Trevor, that we're all Jem. But yeah, so interesting. Like what I was saying, it was really trying to just hit home that whole, you know, dreams can come true for young viewers of the film, all two of them that saw it. So I just think it completely missed its mark. It could have been, you know, under the guise of, or under the name of a totally different movie, not even using Jem, they could have made something quite interesting with it that was a quite inspiring film, and still using all this YouTube footage and all that sort of stuff and telling a story. But the fact that they, you know, transplanted, you know, Jem 30 years later just completely, I don't know, almost makes it irrelevant, you know, in terms of that. So, but yeah, we were talking about Sappy. I thought Sappy was when she starts recording or singing the song in the bedroom, and they all happen to wake up and hear her singing. Oh, God, one of those cliches again.
Mm-hmm. And then she can't delete her video from the camera, which, of course, starts the whole thing and gets her viral video up there in the first place. And when you talk about viral videos, again, over the end, it's showing all these... well, basically mock videos of people being inspired by her song and doing their own thing and all being Jem. And I'm pretty sure that there was one with a dude dancing around in a pink wig, and I'm pretty sure on the TV behind him, Jem and the Holograms cartoon was playing, just to give one little last dig in to show you what you're not getting.
Yeah, exactly. Well, he's probably some diehard fan that was happy to contribute the footage but then saw the finished product and went, "Oh, no." It's nothing like it. So, but one thing probably one of the good things I liked about it was the end credits, how they all played over the top of like all the band equipment and stuff like that. I thought that was kind of clever, but that was, you know, way like too little too late. But I'm glad I did stick around for the end, because that kind of, it raised a couple of questions, a little bit that happens in the end, but I did have to do a bit of research and I'm starting to sort of put two and two together. So I don't know if I'm jumping ahead or if it's a spoiler alert, but yeah, I'd be interested to talk to you about the misfits.
Yep, you're talking about that mid-credit scene, which is quite popular in all movies now, since it became a thing from the Marvel movies. And interestingly enough, Jem was briefly owned by Marvel before they sold it off, just so you know, a bit of trivia of this before. But yep, Erica, being rejected from all, goes to find an old band that she had rejected because she didn't want to take the risk. A band known as the Misfits, who also happened to be the band managed by Eric in the original cartoon, who were the, basically they were the bad guys. They were the anti-Jem.
And the thing I love about that, Trevor, as soon as I hear that, I go, wow, what an exciting movie it could have been. If you'd had Erica and the Misfits as the villains, you know, this rival band that was playing throughout, you know, that was, you know, trying to take them down the entire movie, that sounds like something a lot more interesting. And I believe that was kind of, you know, as you're saying, Eric and the Misfits in the original series were, I suppose, the villains of most of the episodes. So that sounds to me a far more interesting plot, and I really wish they'd used it.
Yeah, well, it makes me think that perhaps if this, say, were to get a straight-to-DVD or straight-to-streaming sequel, it could actually be something that is in more in the spirit of the original cartoon.
Oh, definitely. I did think it was, you know, going back to when they made it, when they were probably assuming it to be a big success, you know, they probably were setting it up to have a sequel, you know, and I think definitely they wanted to introduce the Misfits and almost give you that whole backstory in the first installment of, you know, being the first movie we've seen, and then there'd be subsequent ones to follow. So, yeah, I do think if they did do a straight to straight to streaming or whatever, a sequel, it would be interesting to see, because they've already set up that stuff and they could probably start getting into sort of the spirit of the episode, the original episode. So, yeah, I thought that was something that was really interesting to have explored, but unfortunately when it's 2 minutes from the end, it's not going to save this movie.
No, definitely. Yeah, I thought it was a nice touch. I did enjoy that scene, especially when she goes, "Oh, and Rio's fallen for Jem," and then you get the lead singer of the Misfits, "Pizzazz, Rio's in love with Jem," to sort of come out and yeah, just really hammer home just the stuff that's lifted from the cartoon at long last in the mid-credit scene.
It's like, so people, when they leave, can, you know, it's fresh in their memory. Oh, was there references to Jem? Oh, yeah, heaps. But I did a double take. I'm like, going, is that Kesha? You know, the pizzazz singer. I'm like, is that her making a cameo? But nah, just a similar look.
Actually, oh, we should have mentioned it before. Speaking of cameos, when they're sort of building the buzz about Jem before her first pop-up show, you've got things like Jimmy Kimmel and Alyssa Milano having a fake interview. Dwayne The Rock Johnson turns up saying, "Hey, you should do something with me." They even get Chris Pratt in there as a cameo in these celebrity sound bites that they dig up. I'm thinking, why are these people doing this in this movie? I don't understand. I think they all believed that it was going to be something more than it was, obviously.
Exactly. If they were fans of the original series or knew about it and were approached, they would have gone, "Hell yeah, I love the fuck Chris Pratt, so he used to date Jem." Yeah, of course I did. So yeah, it was very clever having those topical sort of references in there. So, but yeah, unfortunately couldn't save the overall movie.
Well, it sounds like you're ready to talk about your thoughts of the overall movie. So I think we probably should move on to whether or not we could redeem this. So I picked the movie, Christian, so I shall let you go first.
Okay, Trevor. Gosh, it's always so hard because you've got to think about, you know, the different audience these films are made for. But I think the biggest thing with Jem or Jem and the Holograms is the fact that, you know, taking something that's so iconic from the 80s, you know, for a lot of children or a lot of people, and then transplanting it 30 years later, that doesn't seem to work. You need to make it should have been set in the 80s. It should have been appealing to that age group, because they want to get nostalgic. I've seen people come back and see, you know, screenings of 80s movies and love seeing them on the big screen. And this would have been a chance for people to see sort of a live action or an animated version if it was to have gone down that path. So I think it was a lot of wasted opportunities when they could have simply just made this a teenage, you know, success story movie, or the trials and tribulations of success, you know, for the younger generation, as something totally separated from Jem. So I see how it could inspire teenage girls, possibly, or the next generation, but really this film, you know, is definitely, Trevor, not for me. I really don't find it redeemable. It had a lot of clever sort of editing techniques. We've mentioned the, you know, the use of the sound with the YouTube videos. And I do like the use of viral videos throughout, like it kind of, and you know, and even though we joke about it, but the sort of Google Maps and the, you know, the pop-up of the text, because I'm surprised we don't see that in more film nowadays. Like, I thought that would become kind of the in thing, but it sort of represented what I think the now generation type movies should, you know, or may soon be looking like. So in that way, it was kind of exciting. But, you know, I think they, you know, rather than promote Jen to the original audience that, you know, it should have been sold to, it takes digs at that crowd, and I just think that, you know, that was the worst thing for it. So yeah, I'm gonna have to say irredeemable, and yeah, it makes me want to watch the original series and get this out of my mind, I think.
Fair enough. An irredeemable from Christian. So with mine, I mean, it was highly predictable, but as you said, it did some interesting things, particularly with those viral videos, and with the way that it used social media over some of the backing of key scenes. I mean, I can't say anyone was particularly bad in this movie. The leads were likable enough, even though each one was a walking, talking cliche. Juliet Lewis hamming it up was entertaining throughout, though. And this is the ironic bit I was talking about before. The movie kind of focuses on how Juliette Lewis won't take any risks in signing a new band. However, this is a movie that would have been taking a risk if it had have gone with the original series and tried to stay faithful, but instead they played it safe by giving us this teen growth movie. The movie itself is kind of counterpoint to one of the themes running within it. The Gem cartoon references really were crowbarred in there, and obviously, I think anyone who already feels bad about this movie probably would feel more insulted by having those in there. If it hadn't built that expectation by calling itself Gem and the Holograms, it may have got a very different reception. It may have been slightly more successful. I can't say, it probably wouldn't have been a hit. It really tried hard to give depth to social media. And in fact, maybe they should have instead called it Social Media the Musical. could have been a better choice. But overall, I actually ended up enjoying this movie more than expected. I found myself groaning at times at just how sappy it did get, but other times I actually found myself getting into it, and at the end of the day I found myself enjoying it, Christian. And
oh my gosh, Trevor.
Really, I found that, you know what, I'm not going to rush back to it, but I'm saying that take away the whole fact that it completely messes with its source material and gives us a very un-Gem and the Holograms, Gem and the Holograms movie. But you know what? I find this movie redeemable. I enjoyed it, and I am so surprised to be saying that right now.
I am really surprised. Like, I'm on the cusp, but I made the decision of irredeemable Trevor. But interesting, we can be split on this one.
Yeah, I was sure the camp factor was going to give us some points for you. There were some quite campy moments in this, but I guess, as I said previously, camp can only go so far.
Oh, definitely. And hey, if you'd given me an 80s 80s parody or campy parody of the original or something that was true to the original, I think I could have really got behind that. And it would have lived up to what Wikipedia calls an American musical fantasy. But unfortunately, yeah, to me, just another teen movie that was a bit meh.
Fair enough. Well, in a nice change, the occasional we actually have another opinion here. Susie, or Violet von Dutch, as regular listeners know her, actually watched the movie with me, so she wanted to give her little list of redeeming features as well. So I'm going to hand it over to Susie.
I really liked it. I will go on record and say that I really like this movie. I didn't think I would, because I liked Gem when I was younger, and I thought anything that has the Gem name attached to it had to be just as dodgy as the show back then. But yeah, I really, really liked it. I liked its message that everyone is Gem, and yeah, just to be yourself. And I thought that was really beautiful. And yeah, and it was great. Yeah. I'm probably the only person that really liked it, but yay. I'll go on record and say, yeah, I want the sequel. I want the Misfits to come out farting. Bring it on.
So there we go. We've got an irredeemable and a redeemable. Officially, we're split again, but it's the other way around. That doesn't happen very often, does it?
No, it doesn't. So I'm like, do I take back my... No, I'm not going to. I didn't really enjoy it, so no, I'm going to stand by it. So it's not something I'll be rushing to see again anytime soon.
We've got an extra bonus, an extra second opinion, because you know what? This movie does have its fans, and not just Susie, and not just me as a, yeah, it was all right. I've got another review here, which is titled, "Let me start by saying how much I love this movie." Very subtle. As someone who grew up watching Gem, I went into this movie with certain expectations. However, having seen the trailer, I knew there would be some differences. Let me start by saying how much I love this movie. I laughed. I cried. I got excited. I felt the heartbreak, and overall, I just felt all the feels. The songs were catchy and cute, the costumes were great, even though the storyline was average. It is a great movie about staying positive, keeping what is important in focus, and finding oneself. I do wish they had included a little more of the Gem Misfits rivalry, and really hope they release a sequel. 5 stars.
Well, hey, there's a lot of people out there that seem to want that Misfits Gem sequel, so maybe, I don't know, I think that maybe I'll be able to find it redeemable. Might be able to change our tune.
So if we go to the sequel, we'll have to check it out for the redeeming features.
Yeah, definitely, and we might be able to change our minds. So, but yeah, no, I was going to say that reviewer sounds like someone who saw the movie for not a Gem adaptation, but, you know, obviously they like the series too. So, oh well. They are going to be fans and detractors out there, I'm sure.
Absolutely. So there we go, another split decision. Oh, are we going to get to a fully redeemable movie this year, Christian? Do you think we're going to get to one soon?
I don't know. Oh, I know. Yeah, we're a few months in, but yeah, no, we never know, Trevor. There's always many other weird and wonderful things. Gosh, you should see my list for the rest of the year of some of the ideas I've got. I've got some doozies, but the decision for the next one was a bit of a tricky one, and probably more for my interest's sake. It was a film that I wanted to revisit again, so not too sure if you've seen it. So we're going to, featuring the late actor Robin Williams, we're going to a 90s film, actually. It's one that I've, you know, have seen a few times, and I do remember that when it came out, it was a box office dud, and a lot of people just didn't quite understand it. It's since become somewhat of a cult film, and I think more cult in the way of being obscure. You know, it's always a very hard movie to find, and I know a lot of people always say they haven't seen it for many years. So I want to look at the 1992 movie starring Robin Williams called Toys. Was it a bad movie, or was it just misunderstood for the time of release? Now, Trevor, have you seen this before?
I haven't seen it. I've seen the poster many times. I'm aware of its existence, but it will be a fresh one for me.
Oh, well, I definitely, you know, you know, it's a mixed one, yeah. It's like I was with Mummy Dearest. It's like, you know, like there's elements I like about these movies, and, you know, but, you know, is it just me liking it for certain camp value or cult value? So I'd be interested to see your take on Toys from 1992 with Robin Williams and Joan Cusack. So is it a bad, irredeemable movie, or is it just misunderstood? I think it's time to look back on it over 20 years later and see if it is redeemable. So I'm up for that challenge if you are.
Absolutely. And of course, we will give the definitive opinion on whether or not it's redeemable, because that's what we do. It's our thing.
That's what we do. And let's see if we can both agree on it, and it can be redeemable. We shall see.
I make no promises given our track record so far this year.
That's probably a wise decision.
Excellent. So, and of course, if anyone out there wants to put their opinion forward, do you think we were too harsh on Gem? Do you think we were too generous? Do you have any redeeming or irredeeming features with regards to Toys from 1992? We would love to hear from you, and it's super duper easy to get in touch with us. You can head to our homepage, rufusproject.com, and leave a comment below this very episode. You can find the Rufus Project on Twitter and Facebook, or we have the email, therufusproject@gmail.com. And we would definitely love to hear from you, any comments you have, and of course, if you have any movies that you would like to see if we can redeem, give us those challenges, and you know, if it's possible, we'll even try to get you involved in the podcast itself. Particularly if you want to champion a movie that no one else seems to like, because that's always fun.
Yes, we always like having a third conversationist. So yeah, always encouraging that. But in the meantime, Trevor and I will just keep on trucking with some of the weird and wonderful selections that are out there.
Oh, we have got some, I can say from my end as well, we've got some really weird and perhaps wonderful stuff on the way.
Oh, gosh. Well, yeah, okay. Maybe I need to up the ante on my list a bit. Maybe I was being tame.
Ooh, what am I done?
You got off. You got off easy with toys. I'm just telling you that now. I can be harsher. So I thought after Mummy Dearest and Gem, I thought we'd get another end of the scale. So yeah, I'm looking forward to chatting with you about toys in a couple of weeks.
Fantastic, and of course. Of course, everyone out there, make sure you subscribe through iTunes or your favorite podcast player so that you can get the redeeming features nice and fresh each fortnight. And of course, we have our mini podcast every other week as well, where we talk about geek and pop culture stuff. So it's all on the same feed. Definitely subscribe. And we hope you will listen to more of our stuff.
Definitely, because we'll keep recording it.
Absolutely. So, Christian, this has certainly been a very entertaining discussion, as always. As usual, the movies may not be that great, but I always love these conversations.
Oh, I think many times we bring out more stuff than the movies ever really intended to bring out. So I'm always up for a chat about these. So thank you again for having me on board, Trevor. Always up for it.
Fantastic. So until next time, Christian, enjoy and enjoy toys.
Yeah, thank you too.
Good to be bad, so bad it's good. What's this movie? Do you think we should? It's got bad dialogue, dodgy creatures, but we want to know what the redeeming features.
Boy? Oh boy.
Christian and Trevor on the case, watching movies from all over the place. IMDb says it's bad, but we want to know, is it fun to be had?
Boy? Oh boy.
Redeeming features.